Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is columnist and Albany bureau chief and regular right here on the Capital Connection, like Daily News' Ken Lovett. Ken Lovett is by far the best of the Albany correspondents. Welcome back.
It's good to be back.
So, Ken, I guess there's a $142 billion budget. What's in and what's out?
It's more like $150 billion when you put everything in.
Sure. They,
you know,
Change.
Math is funny. You would think, you know, one and one equals two, but not in Albany.
Yeah.
But what is in and what is out? Well, in is some school reforms that have gotten the unions or some of the unions riled up and a lot of the lawmakers angry, but Governor got them. Among them, you're going to have more testing, but stronger testing in terms when it comes to rating teachers. The testing is going to be even more important for teachers, standardized testing, which they don't like.
I think for good reason, by the way, for whatever it's worth. You know, I've been pretty outraged about this because you take a teacher, you put them in one of the most challenged areas, and you say, okay, we're going to rate you in the same way we rate teachers in Scarsdale. And I just think that's wrong because it's a very tough thing. You use the word reform. I don't want to fight with you ever, Ken, because I have such respect for you. But you use the word reform. I just wanted to ask you whether the word reform had, it was in italics or had quotation marks around it.
Well, I mean, it could be good reform or bad reform. We don't know. Reform, you know, it's changes, and there's definitely changes here. I would say the education reform slash changes are far more consequential than probably the ethics changes that were included, which to me, you know, have been hailed by the governor as transformational and seems more of kind of a baby step forward than anything. It requires more disclosure, which is always a good thing, but there's loopholes and it doesn't really go at the heart of the problem of corruption here in Albany. But, you know, the governor is going to sell it as, hey, this is a major deal. And let's not forget, it's the third major ethics reform proposal we've had now in 5 years with this governor. You know, and I wouldn't be surprised if in the next couple of years we get a fourth.
He was in real trouble because of his cancellation of the Moreland Commission a number of years ago. In fact, we have heard, correctly or not, that he is under investigation by Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney, for having snuffed out the life of the Moreland Commission, which was getting close, we are told, to finding some real wrongdoing in government. And one wonders how important this so-called ethics reform was to him.
Oh, I think it was very important. And certainly, you know, they want to send a message we're doing something as Preet Bharara is rooting around, the U.S. attorney is rooting around Albany, not just looking into the Cuomo administration, but lawmakers. You know, don't forget when he indicted or when he charged originally Sheldon Silver, who was then the assembly speaker back in January or February, whatever month it was, he uttered the phrase, stay tuned.
The most famous two words in Albany this year.
Absolutely. So they didn't want to go. And the governor saw it as an opportunity to yet again try and burnish quote-unquote ethics credentials. Again, you know, what he originally proposed and what ended up happening was a far cry. And I think people are disappointed. You know, does this package help? Sure. You know, more disclosure always helps, even with the loopholes that are part of it. But does it get to the heart of the problem? No, not really.
So the heart of the problem is,
you know, a big part of it, it's two prong. One is certainly the amount of money that flows into Albany legally through campaign contributions, lobbying. We forget that when George Pataki was governor, when he took over in 1995, lobbying in New York was something like a $7 or $9 million a year industry. Now it's over $200 billion. So there's just a lot of money flying around. And then on top of that,
and some people call that legal bribery.
Legal bribery. And on top of that is the, and the Moreland people talked about what's legal being actually worse than what's not legal. Because the truth is, you can have all the ethics laws in the world, and if someone wants to do something illegal, they're going to do it. They're going to find a way to try and gin the system.
Right.
But this stuff is what's legal. So what do you have? You have that, you know, a lot of lobbying money, a lot of money flying around Albany. You have a ton of campaign contributions, big donors, big money with, you know, influence in the state. And that's a lot of the problems. You know, what they haven't been able to get to, and then you have these outside interests where, you know, lawmakers are working at firms, law firms that have clients with business before the state, and even if it's okay, because it is a part-time legislature, certainly there's an appearance at times that something could be, you know, wrong. So, you know, this ethics package doesn't deal with any of that. How you deal with it, that's a tough one. I mean, you know, certainly.
Well, Eric Schneiderman has a way of dealing with it.
Yeah, full-time legislature.
Attorney General comes out. He's sort of known as a milquetoastian character. He comes out with a obviously a spit in the governor's eye, and he said...
Yeah, he said maybe a full-time legislature where you ban all outside income. He said in 2015, maybe that's the way to go now. Of course, you need a constitutional amendment. The governor has kind of danced around the issue, saying it's something that should be considered or talked about, but he never really pushed for it. You know, the whole thing with campaign finance reform is a tricky thing now because of Citizens
United.
Sure. Because you can limit all the donations you want, but there's unlimited donations. We really saw it hit New York last year with the state Senate races, you know, where all this money, this outside money, supposedly unaffiliated with campaigns, came in. And it kind of made a mockery of the campaign limits. But, you know, they did nothing to limit how much money can go to lawmakers. They kind of danced around and said, we're going to limit how you can spend some of your campaign money. Because, you know, basically now you can spend it to use your lifestyle as long, you know, to fund your lifestyle as long as it's really, really, really not for personal use. But, you know, proving that has been hard. So they put some definitions in, but there's a loophole. So you can't buy clothes with your campaign money unless you need it for campaign purposes for some reason.
Sure.
So, you know, it's just... they didn't get to that route. You know, they didn't ban the use of campaign money for legal fees. You know, lawmakers over the last decade, since 2004, have spent, I think it's now over $7.5 million in campaign money, and lawmakers and governors
when they get arrested
on legal fees, when they get arrested or when they're under investigation.
Sure.
And then you have people who have done that, like Joe Bruno, who used a lot of his campaign money, a couple of million, but then gets reimbursed by the state for his campaign fees.
So, Ken Levitt, I got to ask you this. The governor stands up with Speaker Hastie, and they hold their hands up Rocky style, and they say, we won, we got ethics reform. But at the time, they didn't quite tell us what that ethics reform was. Was that disingenuous?
Well, I think, to be fair, I think they did in that case say what it was. And the problem
was...
Well,
they didn't tell us everything.
And the problem was... Here you have a bill that the highlight of this ethics package, and there's other things in there. There's, you know, pension forfeiture for those lawmakers.
Yeah, but first there's got to be a constitutional amendment.
I get it. And there's, you know,
and wives are going to have a sliver of the money that.
I'm just saying there's other things, but the central piece of this and what the governor focused heavily on, even though he says it's a 5-point plan, was disclosure. You know, we're going to disclose that blah blah blah. So the bill that does this, that they're going to ask them to vote on, they announce on Sunday that we have a conceptual framework, and then the actual bill nobody sees because it's not printed until just a couple of hours before it's voted on. And normally by law, the legislature, you know, the bills get printed, and the legislature has to wait 3 days for them to age, and then they can act on them.
Sure.
So the idea being that the lawmakers themselves and the public can go through them and see if changes need to be made or what's in them. What are you voting on? In this case, you have a disclosure package that nobody disclosed until a couple of hours before. The governor grants special permission. It's called a message of necessity that says you don't have to wait the 3 days. And they vote on it. They print it. It's still hot when they vote on it on their desk. And then it goes through.
And those messages.
Hardly disclosure.
And those messages of necessity, as we have said many times on this program, were supposed to be for things like emergencies like tidal waves, not doing business as usual.
Yeah, although it's becoming. Look, I mean, the reality is if there was more openness in the process, you know, probably more people would have less of a problem with it, you know, if you knew specifically what
sure.
was being. But so much of this, well, this year in particular, but we say it every year, you know, we're in the middle of it. This is the worst year I've ever seen. But, you know, you had conference committees that were convened, you know, of lawmakers, which is a joint conference committee that includes lawmakers from both houses of both sides of the aisle. And they started their work, and they got all these table targets, and this is what you're going to negotiate. And then the bills got printed. They did nothing. And we all knew it was a sham anyway, these conference committees. But here, they didn't even go through the full dance. They didn't even, like, play out the sham. Here, it was just like, all right, well, we don't even need to do this anymore. Let's just print the bills.
Yeah, it's really something. Talk to me about whether Andrew Cuomo has made a mistake. I know your newspaper has editorialized pro Cuomo on some of this stuff, but made a mistake in alienating the teachers' unions the way that he has. And teachers, I'm getting mail from all over the place about how much teachers hate Cuomo.
I think that the governor thought that I'm going to take on teachers. I think he thought that would be a very good thing to do, that it would be accepted publicly, that the unions would be bad, but you know what? It's okay. I'm going to take on unions. You know, nobody likes unions. But the reality is, the polls show that most people were siding with the unions.
At least with the teachers.
With the teachers, right. With the teachers' unions. They also were very aggressive with ads and with billboards. You know, you're driving up the thruway and they made it personal. I know there was one billboard that I saw in a couple places on the thruway and locally that's in Albany that said something like, you know, you attack teachers. How about, you know, talking with teachers or something like that? And
I heard about one. I don't know if it's true that he had. What do you expect from a man who has failed the bar exam?
Yeah, I don't know.
Got a little dirty there.
Yeah, and I don't even know if that's true or not. But
right, me neither.
But that said, yeah, no, it was. They were much more aggressive. Interestingly enough, the teachers' unions themselves, the city teacher union headed by Michael Mulgrew and the state teacher union headed by Karen McGee, they've kind of split in the last couple of weeks. Mulgrew is seen much more as someone who is transactional, who looked at what the governor put out and said, okay, let's negotiate this and see what the best deal we can get. McGee, who heads the state teachers union, was like, no, we want to kill this. We want to reject it. We don't want a watered down version of what we already don't like. And so they went hard, and that caused us a rift between the two unions. And don't forget, Karen McGee, who was elected, I think, last year, was elected by her membership because the teachers unions, the statewide one, they were upset that the previous leadership, Dick Iannuzzi, didn't go hard enough after Cuomo. So she was unrelenting this time around and really went after Cuomo at every corner and even was urging lawmakers to reject this education package, whereas Mulgrew and his people were telling the city lawmakers, it's okay if you vote for this, you know, we're not going to come after you.
Huh. That's very interesting. So if the citizen was to look at what has happened and is happening in Albany right now, should they vomit?
I would say for the last few years. Now, should they vomit? I don't know. Some people have really strong constitutions. So,
But it's pretty bad. I mean, it's pretty shady.
Well, I think what you're seeing now is, and it's going to only, I think, get worse for the governor unless he really severely changes tactics. And even then, you've seen the end of, as one former lawmaker, Dick Brodsky, said, you know, legislating by fiat. By executive fiat. They're not going to just roll over for the governor anymore. It's his second term. His numbers, while still good, his poll numbers aren't sky high anymore. He's made a ton of enemies all over the place. Democrats, Senate Democrats are mad at him. Assembly Democrats deal with him because they have to, but then they don't like a lot of the things he was pushing. The unions, as you said, were very influential. You know, the teacher unions and the government unions, they really don't like him. So there's just more and more enemies building up, and the Senate Republicans. So I think it's going to be harder for him now going forward. He just can't, you know, deign things to happen, and they're going to happen. And we saw that because a lot of the major stuff that he pushed for the budget, he'll tell you, I got ethics reform. He'll say, and I got school reform.
But he got half.
And not even that. That's not surprising. He's done that a lot because then he can claim he got the issue. You know, people don't delve into the details, the public as much. But he lost a lot of stuff. You know, he wanted, you know, the DREAM Act, the Education Investment Tax Credit. He wanted a sexual assault policy for college campuses, private college campuses.
Let's go over them pretty quickly. Andrew, I'm listening to the excellent biography about Cuomo, The Contender by Michael Schneerson, as I drive it my hour in the car and going out. And, you know, he goes into his Catholic school education. Now, a lot of kids, great kids, go to Catholic schools and do very well. But this state has always been anathematic about supporting parochial education, and he wanted it. In this budget, he had a way around it, which was we're going to give a tax credit, which you just named, to parents who were sending their kids to private or parochial schools. That came out. Do we know why it came out?
Yeah, the Assembly Democrats just wouldn't go for it. The Democrats hate that idea. They feel it would take $100 million of money that can go toward public education. What the governor tried to do this year...
But the Senate was for it, weren't they?
The Senate was for it, and the Cardinal Dolan, the Archbishop of New York, was strongly for it.
You don't want to mess with the Cardinal.
You don't want to mess with the Cardinal, and he's not happy right now. But the reality, what the governor tried to do, and I don't know how hard he actually pushed for it in negotiations, but certainly...
You could say he had the issue.
Certainly, he proposed this. He took the tax credit, which the Republicans in the Senate wanted, but the Assembly Democrats didn't, and he coupled it with the DREAM Act, which would provide state tuition assistance to the college kids of undocumented immigrants.
And who didn't like that one?
And the Senate Republicans don't want to use taxpayer money on people they deem, quote unquote, illegal immigrants.
And you know who
and
else?
The Assembly Democrats wanted it.
You know who else was against it? The students in my class.
Yeah, a lot of
you
people.
Say, hey, why should they get it if I'm not getting it?
But the governor thought the only way I'm going to get these two issues, which are polarizing issues, is if maybe I put them in the budget where it kind of gets hidden, you know, in the overall package, and I link them together. Because then it's like, okay, if you really want the DREAM Act Assembly, you have to take the tax credit. And let's face it, there are a lot of Assembly Democrats. Sure. There are a number of them who support the issue,
absolutely,
including the Speaker, Carl Hastie, who until he became Speaker was a co-sponsor of the Education Investment Tax Credit. So he thought, all right, Assembly Democrats, you want DREAM Act? Give us the tax credit. Okay, Senate Republicans, you want the tax credit? Give us the DREAM Act.
Or maybe Andrew Cuomo, being a master tactician, put them both in knowing he would have the issue. Mm-hmm. It would be redound to his credit. But, you know, so those are two things you could give up in your negotiations.
And that was definitely part of it. And I think that's exactly what happened. But he lost a lot of stuff that he wanted. You know, he went on a tour for minimum wage increase. And not only did they not do the minimum wage increase.
And that was the Senate.
That was the Senate.
The Republican Senate.
But lo and behold, they not only didn't do the minimum wage increase that the governor wanted and even higher that de Blasio and the Assembly wanted, but they somehow passed a tax break for those who buy yachts and private jets.
Well, that's interesting because I've seen that explained away by the Senate guys who are saying, hey, if you buy your yacht in Florida or if you buy a yacht in Rhode Island and deliver it there, then in fact, you're not going to buy it in New York where you have to pay all that tax.
And you're not going to store it in New York. Yes, that is the economic argument they make. Now, there's a thing called optics in politics and, you know, basically appearance. And at a time when you're not doing minimum wage, at a time as, you know, people like Mayor de Blasio in New York City and others are raising the issue of income inequality, you're not doing anything to address that, but you are giving a sales tax break, you know, no sales tax if you buy a private jet. It just didn't look good. And making matters worse, okay, even if you're going to do it and you're making the economic argument, because, you know, Carl Hastie, the Assembly Speaker, was supporting this as well, and he's a Democrat. So you're making the economic argument saying it's going to create jobs, it's going to, you know, have these sales here in New York. But the Republicans in the Senate, Dean Skelos, the leader, and John DeFrancisco, the Senate Finance Committee chair, they went even further by tying it to the poor, where they said, well, the poor get the earned income tax credit. So, you know, and that's a lot more compared to what they make than what this is going to be. And John DeFrancisco said, you know, here you have, you know, you're talking about, you know, a tax credit on these boats and you know, on these yachts and on these planes. But, you know, the poor have it, too. It's poor tax credits. And people were just like, really, you went there? You know, it's one thing to make the economic argument, but to kind of tie it to, well, the poor get tax credits, so should this go through? It was surprising.
How much of this is just pure theater? What I'm saying is, you know, everybody's suspect as far as I'm concerned. I don't know that the governor really wanted a raise in the minimum wage. You know, he had a want. He's a Democrat. His progressive people don't like everything he does, so he puts it in there. But in the closed negotiations, do we really know how much honesty there is in what have been articulated as the positions of the players?
I think he wanted school reform. I think he wanted you know,
some ethics. Yeah.
Well, no, but again, when you get into the fine details, the public's eyes glaze over. That's the thing. Once you have the headline, then you have the headline. It was like that with pension reform. You know, he called it reform, and it was this great transformative reform pension, and it really was a baby step from what they had. But nobody's going to delve into that. You know, they read the headline. I think there are issues that the governor has been, you know, we saw last year, he has a problem on his left. And we saw it with Zephyr Teachout, who challenged him in the Democratic primary. We've seen
who did very well.
We saw the Working Families Party go after him, which is union backed and, you know, very left. And so he has a problem. So he went this year with a lot of left issues. At least he publicized them. To be fair, the minimum wage, he did do a campaign. He did travel around the state promoting it. He did, you know, go for it. So can I say in his heart of hearts he was ready to do it? No, I can't. But I will say he did do stuff for that one. He did, you know, he did a number of appearances on that one. They put out a ton of press releases trying to pressure the Senate into it. So I would say he did care about that one.
True or false, the New York State Senate comes out with surprising strength in all of this?
I think true or false. I think the legislature as a whole has a lot more strength. There was a bunch of things the governor tried to do that they rejected. You know, one, which is very insidery, but it was very important. The governor tried to tie a lot of policy issues to the budget, like in a way we had never seen before. And he did that when he introduced what's known as 30-day amendments. He introduces his budget 30 days later. Typically, you introduce some amendments. Most of them are just very dry and technical. But he introduced all these policy. And what did the legislature do? They didn't even introduce the bill in the legislature. In all the years I've been here, I don't remember ever where the governor brought up a budget amendment bill like that and they didn't introduce it. And the idea was they wanted to, A, hold their options in case they wanted to go to court if they couldn't strike a deal, and B, they just thumbed their nose at the governor. I think the legislature, eventually, and we see this with all governors, doesn't matter if it's Andrew Cuomo, George Pataki.
Or Mario Cuomo.
Eventually, it becomes an institutional fight. It doesn't even become Democrat, Republican. I mean, the issues will
still
be there.
But he really, Ken Lovett, we're out of time, but yeah. He really had them on the run in his first term.
He did.
They were scared to death of him. He was sort of portrayed as Darth Vader. He would kill you if you didn't go along. I'm not saying that this is true. I'm just saying that was the image.
He's still extremely powerful, though the Constitution gives the governor enormous, you know, powers, especially in the budget process. What you won't see, I think, anymore is the legislature rolling over. The Republicans won't do a liberal agenda ever since they took a lot of heat for doing same-sex marriage. And
several other people lost in primaries.
Right, the gun bill. And the Democrats have had it. Like, the Democrats are like, you have done nothing for us, especially the Senate Democrats. And they are much more vocal and out there with their criticism of the governor.
Michael Schneerson writes a book very quickly. It's a very good book. It's a very long book. Basically, he names it The Contender. Now, I understand why you name it The Contender. There, because who would buy a book if Andrew Cuomo wasn't a contender? But is he a contender?
It makes it really hard because you're going to read this, and it is a biography.
Yeah,
it is. But with the title, The Contender, in this case, maybe it should be in the fiction section.
A lot of people thought, by the way, Ken Lovett, that it was all over when he got divorced from Kerry Kennedy, and I got a call from one of his best friends who said, if you think it's over, you're wrong. You know, these guys, they don't give up. So who knows? We got George Pataki running for president of the United States up in New Hampshire. Everybody thinks it's a joke.
Speaking of fiction.
Yeah. It's great to have Ken Lovett of the New York Daily News with us. You are a regular here, and you are so appreciated for bringing us the news. This is Alan Chartok. Just continue to enjoy the Capital Connection.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.